2nd, Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. You're with us here on the Ideas Network. Coming up on Central Time, we talk with Wisconsin dog sled racer Blair Braverman about her experience on a reality TV survival show and her new novel that follows fictional contestants on a similar show where things don't go exactly as planned. This is Central Time. Our next guest has a lot more experience than most, certainly than me, when it comes to surviving in the wilderness. In addition to training and racing sled dogs, she appeared on a reality TV show where people are dropped into an unfamiliar and wild location, left to fend for themselves as long as possible, starting without even clothes. Here's a taste of the Discovery Channel series, Naked and Afraid.
Wes has a strong drive and athleticism, but tends to push himself beyond his limits, earning him an initial primitive survival rating of 6.7. Jesse has years of training as a wilderness guide, but is unsure of her abilities in a true survival situation. She begins with a PSR of 6.9.
Hey!
Hi.
Yeah, how are you?
Good.
I'm Wes.
Jesse.
Nice to see you.
Nice to see you too.
It's been a long time coming.
Yeah.
Are you excited?
Yeah, I'm really excited.
Awkward?
No, I'm pretty comfortable being naked. Are you?
I am too.
Okay, good.
Yeah, this will work out just fine.
Yeah.
Well, in our next guest's new novel, it may not exactly work out fine. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Have you watched survivor-type shows or survival-type shows? Do you have a question for our guest about how things actually work behind the scenes? Do you feel pretty comfortable surviving in the outdoors? Do you have an experience you'd like to share? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@wpr.org. Blair Braverman and her husband, Quince Mountain, have a dog sled team called Braver Mountain Mushing based in northern Wisconsin. Blair ran the Iditarod in Alaska in 2019 and also races closer to home. Her latest book is a novel. It's called Small Game. Blair, welcome back to Central Time.
Thank you so much. I'm so happy to be here.
All right, it's your first novel, I believe, and you had this experience on a survival show. That's the core of your new novel. What led you from there, that experience, to writing this book?
Well, I've been fascinated by survival stories for a very long time. I grew up reading every survival book I could get my hands on. I read Hatchet in school and I loved it. My Side of the Mountain, everything I could possibly read. And as a dog sledder, I spend a lot of time in wilderness, but I have a lot of gear. I have a lot of equipment with me. It's not really a primitive survival situation because I'm always there with my supplies. So when I had the chance to be on a show where I would really be tested, I would be out there with, like, you know, not even shoes, no clothing, which, you know, you think of clothing that going without it will be, the challenge will be modesty. But it's really your first line of shelter. You have nothing to shelter you from the sun, from the cold, from insects. So it provides a really technical challenge to be out there naked. And I just jumped on the opportunity. It was like my childhood dream. I finally got to test myself in that way.
Now, Naked and Afraid was the real life show you were in. Tell us about the core of your novel, the TV show. The premise is actually pretty interesting. The fictional show would be called Civilization.
Yeah. So in the novel, the characters are contestants on a survival show called Civilization, where they're dropped into the wilderness, the North Woods, based on the woods here in Wisconsin. And they don't know where they are. They're given just a couple tools. And then things go terribly wrong. And they think that they're there for a sort of constructed survival situation, but it turns into the real thing very, very quickly. And they have to grapple with that line. What is the line you have to cross to make something real survival? And how long will it take people to recognize that they've crossed it?
Yeah, I won't give away the twist that puts them in the situation, but something that strikes me from the beginning of the book, and this sounds like it probably rings true with your experience. On the one hand, you and your characters, the hunger is real, the cold is real, the constant itching and filthiness and things like that are real. But at the same time, there's a camera crew around and they're trying to come up with storylines and make you into characters. Or could you talk about that weird discrepancy? You're really feeling something very primal and intimate here, and yet it's a contrived show.
Well, it's a lot of pressure when you know people are watching you, because if you have a moment where you don't know what to do, you know, a million people could be watching you. Just sort of stand there looking around. When I was on the show, when I was on Naked and Afraid, the crew is not involved. They don't talk to you. They're nice. They're very professional. but they're not telling you what to do. They're not, you know, instructing you on anything. You're really just, they're like, hey, here you go. You have 3 weeks. Go. We're just going to stand here while you do whatever you want. And it's sort of a wild amount of freedom. Like, you get in there and you're like, wait, literally anything? I can do literally anything. And then, of course, you have to go down this list of how am I going to find shelter? How am I going to get warmth? In our case, I was in South Africa, and we really had to have a big fire going all night long, because we would be surrounded by predators every night, by hyenas usually, but sometimes other animals as well. And we could hear them, we would see their tracks in the morning, and we had to keep the flames big all night long, because otherwise, you know, we had no weapons, we couldn't protect ourselves, we were food. Now, in this book, it's a little bit of a different situation. It's a little bit more of a schemey sort of, you know, a lot of people hear reality show and they think there's some schemey, slimy stuff going on. And there's a little bit more of that in the book. My experience was actually very wholesome.
Excellent. Well, one thing that really struck me that I assume rung true for you from your experience there, your main character's experience of hunger. And I'm hoping most people listening never have and never will experience really long-term hunger in their lives. But can you talk about how, for your characters, and I'm guessing for a participant in an actual show like you were, what a dominant force hunger can become.
Absolutely. You know, for the first day or two, you're excited. You have so much adrenaline going that you don't notice it much, or at least I didn't. But I know when I was out there by day four, by day five, by day six, 10, 11, it becomes the only thing you can think about. And I would just watch animals going by. I'd like, you know, sit overlooking the waterhole, and I would watch, you know, antelope and warthogs. And I would just be like, I cannot eat that. Like, that is food. How do I eat that with my bare hands? That is food walking by. And so, of course, I knew that these people in the wilderness in small game would be having that same challenge. They have a little bit more of a lush environment. I was in a desert. They have rodents and fish. And they have to be creative to try to get that food. But at first, it's the only thing they can think about until things really go wrong.
We're talking to Wisconsin-based sled dog trainer and racer, reality TV show survivor, and author Blair Braverman. Her new novel is called Small Game. We'll pick up that conversation coming up here on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. Blair Braverman is with us, sled dog team leader based in northern Wisconsin, talking about her first novel set around a reality TV survival show gone wrong. The book is called Small Game. Blair was on the show Naked and Afraid. Some of her experiences there helped shape the book. Blair, the characters in your novel participate in this show for a variety of reasons, hoping to get famous, hoping to get some money out of it, putting their skills to the test. When you participated in a real-life reality survival show and made it through it, what did it mean to you?
Oh, I mean, the first thing I was thinking about was just getting to have that experience, getting to go to some incredible part of the world. I didn't, of course, know where I would be when I signed on. And have an experience I would never have any other way. At the time that the show approached me, I was training for the Iditarod, and it was so much work. We had spent years, just all of our effort, all of our money, everything we were doing was to get toward this one goal of running the Iditarod, of mushing across the state of Alaska with my dogs. And so the idea that I could just sort of parachute into an adventure that someone else would have planned for me, and someone else would have organized all the logistics, and I just had to show up and endure and be creative, was really appealing to me. It seemed like the opposite of what I was doing in my everyday life.
Let's talk about starting fires. Now, your characters face a choice. They get to take one tool from a set of tools. One takes a knife. One decides to take something to start fire. There's the option, waterproof container of matches or one of those bow things to start a fire with. One seems more authentic. One seems more practical. Could you talk about that choice of how we're going to start a fire in the wilderness?
Oh, yeah. So one of the characters chooses a bow drill, which, you know, if you haven't seen one, it's a sort of stick and string contraption that allows you to rub sticks together quickly to eventually make a coal. And you know, it's very romantic to have that sort of tool with you. And it also makes things a lot harder. There's a lot to be said for modernity. So it's just an instance for us to learn about the characters when they're choosing whether they want to build fires with matches or with something that's going to be a lot less reliable, but that will allow them to tell themselves a certain story about their identity. It's a glimpse into their own minds.
Now, if someone's out there thinking, yeah, I'd like to do something to test myself in the wilderness, something more than, you know, camping, something less than being dropped in a desert for 6 weeks, what would you suggest as a next step to kind of flex those muscles a little bit?
Well, I don't know if backpacking would be in the category of camping, but I think if you haven't been backpacking, it is not nearly as daunting as it seems. Camping with your supplies on your back, so you're going in for a night or multiple nights. I think the biggest thing when you're outdoors is creativity. You can't possibly bring everything that you might need, so you need to bring supplies that you can be creative with. You might end up jerry-rigging a poncho out of a plastic bag. You might end up having to take shelter under a tree because your tent isn't strong enough for the wind in a particular situation. And you just have to see those things as part of the adventure. And if you're afraid of being cold or uncomfortable, just know that it's going to feel really good when you get back inside and you'll feel really accomplished as well.
Yeah, I'm kind of a whiny baby. How do we change our mindset to be like, hey, I'm cold, but I'm safe. You know, I'm cold, but it's okay to be uncomfortable in this way or itchy or fill in the adjective there.
You know what? As a dog sledder, I will die on this hill. Most people do not wear enough clothing outside. If you are cold outside, you need to put on more clothes. Like the number of clothes that I go out in when it's 30 or 40 below, I am like a house as I'm walking across the yard. And I just think more people should embrace that kind of layering. Like, just if you're cold, add more, because there's no reason to be cold. You'll have fun out there if you can just stay warm enough. And as for other things, you know, bugs, sleep deprivation, all that stuff, I would say try it once and see whether you're suited for it or not. And then you can decide whether you want to try it again, but don't dismiss it out of hand. And get someone who knows what they're doing to take you and who will take you on a really beginner-friendly trip. You don't have to do everything at once. Just getting out there at all is fantastic.
All right, now, I did a rod, a lot of sled dog racing, naked and afraid. Do you have a next adventure in mind now?
Oh, I'm not announcing it quite yet, but we do have a couple plans in place for the team.
Okay, well, hope to talk to you when that happens. Blair, thanks again for joining us today.
I hope so. I can't wait.
That's Blair Braverman. Blair and her husband have a dog sled team called Braver Mountain Mushing based in northern Wisconsin. We talked to her today about her new novel. It's called Small Game. It's inspired, at least in part, by her experience as a contestant on a reality TV survival show. Lots of twists and turns along the way. I guess my main lesson is if you're going to be on a reality show, look up the creators of the show. Make sure they're really on the level. I don't think that's spoiling anything about the book. I have this thing where I get older, but just never wiser. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, if you bought tickets to big events in recent years, there's a good chance you went through Ticketmaster. A lot of people are unhappy with the dominant role of the ticket-selling giant after a major problem with tickets for Taylor Swift concerts. We'll get the latest on possible antitrust regulation and what it could mean for you. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Barrett. Earlier this month, singer-songwriter Taylor Swift announced her upcoming world tour. But when tickets went on sale through the online ticket broker Ticketmaster, the site crashed, and those who were able to secure tickets reported facing high prices and lots of fees. Following outrage from Swift's fans, lawmakers and state attorneys general called for a closer look at the company, and the Justice Department was reportedly already in the midst of an antitrust investigation against Ticketmaster's parent company, Live Nation Entertainment. Democratic Senator Amy Klobuchar from Minnesota told NPR that a Senate committee will hold a hearing on competition or lack of same in the ticket industry.
There's site disruptions, as we've seen from the Taylor Swift incident. There's slow queues, and it isn't just Taylor Swift concerts. A lot of these hidden fees, high fees are going on because there is no incentive for fair prices and superior offerings and innovation if you're the only company in town.
Some are calling Ticketmaster a monopoly that needs to be broken up. It remains to be seen, though, what, if any, impact the outrage will have on the ticket industry. Justin Curto is a music writer for Vulture who's been covering Ticketmaster and the Taylor Swift fallout. Justin, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Before we get to Taylor Swift, set the stage for us, Justin. How big is Ticketmaster? How much does it dominate, in particular, the music industry, though they do more than music?
Yeah, so since around 2010, when Ticketmaster merged with Live Nation, which is an event promotion company, Ticketmaster now, from what I know, handles around or over 70% of live event ticketing. And specifically for an artist of the caliber of Taylor Swift, who is performing at big sports stadiums, Ticketmaster is pretty much the go-to ticketing platform for places like that.
Now let's get into the Taylor Swift story here. She announces a concert. A Taylor Swift series of concerts is a big deal. What happened next?
There were so many fans trying to get tickets. And that made sense because this wasn't just a Taylor Swift tour. She was marketing as her Eras tour, and it was going to be career spanning and really big. And she hadn't been on tour in years. And so there's millions of fans signing up for this verified fan presale. And then a fraction of those fans got tickets, or not tickets, got codes that would then allow them to log in to get presale tickets. But when they logged in on the day of the fan presale, fans were reporting that there were wait times and Ticketmaster was working slowly and they were being booted out of line. And then when they were finally in line, they were either finding tickets that had exorbitant fees or tickets were already being resold for thousands of dollars. And so fans were frustrated by this and took out this frustration on social media in the days afterward, which leads us to where we are now, where there are politicians talking about Ticketmaster, and Taylor Swift has spoken out, and Ticketmaster and Live Nation have defended themselves from that.
And we heard from Kim on the Ideas Network Facebook page, who says, I waited 8 hours with a presale code for Taylor, error after error, finally got two tickets that were $210 each. The total was $550 with the fees. So that, by my math, is about $130 in fees. Kim, definitely not alone, right, Justin?
Right. From what I've heard, it sounds like there are thousands, if not millions, of fans who felt the same way if they got tickets in the first place.
Now, can you talk about what we're hearing? We heard a U.S. senator there talking about this. Give us a sense of the response we're seeing both at the state and federal level to the outrage over Ticketmaster.
Yeah, there's a lot of people responding to this at once. There are attorney generals in multiple states who are opening investigations into Ticketmaster and asking for constituents to reach out to talk about their experiences buying either tickets to Taylor Swift or to other concerts that may have been affected by either these wait times or fees or the dynamic pricing that Ticketmaster uses. And then there's people in both houses of Congress speaking out. You played the clip from Amy Klobuchar, who is now holding a Senate hearing in the Antitrust Committee with Mike Lee, a Republican, on Ticketmaster. And then there were also representatives in the House, like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, who were calling out Ticketmaster and Live Nation as a monopoly and calling for that to be broken up. And then on top of that, there's people who aren't in government also trying to work on this, whether that be activists and different advocacy groups who are speaking out about Ticketmaster. And also I've seen on social media different, even Taylor Swift fans who are lawyers getting together and trying to see what private citizens can do to bring something against Ticketmaster and Live Nation.
Talking to Justin Curto, music writer for Vulture, looking at Ticketmaster, a lot of outrage following difficulties with Taylor Swift concert tickets. The story's gone back many years, though, a lot of other concerns over the years. Justin, in one of your pieces, you interviewed somebody with a group that looks at antitrust issues in particular, worried not just about Ticketmaster being such a dominant player in the ticket-selling industry, but about this merger some years back with Live Nation, to where they're doing the promotion and they're selling the tickets to their events. What are some of the concerns they raised?
Yeah, it's pretty much this idea that from beginning to end, Live Nation, Ticketmaster is the group handling a lot of these events, and that can cause issues not only with these things like fees, but with pressuring venues and artists to work with them. There was a New York Times investigation in, I think, 2018 that found venues being pressured to use Ticketmaster because they were having Live Nation promoted events or the reverse of that. And that led to a Justice Department investigation, which led to the terms of this merger from 2010 being extended for 5 years through now 2025. And that's separate from the current Justice Department investigation going on. But just this idea that this leaves room for a lot of control to be exerted by one group because they can handle it pretty much from beginning to end.
Right. And the concern there that the lawmakers we've talked about raise, that this antitrust group raises, is that given there's so little competition and given that Ticketmaster and Live Nation can both coordinate here, that ultimately can lead to worse service and higher fees for would-be concert goers. Is that what's ultimately at stake here for people?
Yeah, yeah. The president of the American Antitrust Institute, who I interviewed, mentioned that looking at fees is a great indicator of how much competition there is going on in the concert ticketing realm, because if there were more platforms, everyone would be trying to keep fees down. But you see these fees for Ticketmaster shows that, like you said, can total over $100, depending on how expensive the tickets were in the first place. And that can be evidence of little competition in the first place.
What has Ticketmaster / Live Nation said in the face of these charges and after all the fallout from the Taylor Swift concert tickets?
Yeah, the response has been interesting because at first Ticketmaster, they chalked up to having delays on the site and said that they want to improve those. But there's also been this undercurrent in both that initial statement and then Live Nation's response to the reported Justice Department investigation that says that the reason why Ticketmaster occupies such a large market share is because of quality, because they're claiming that they're far and away from the next best ticketing platform and everyone wants to use them, which doesn't quite check out with what artists and venues talk about using Ticketmaster, with the idea that it's pretty much, like people have been saying, the only game in town for ticketing.
Now, people are upset with Ticketmaster. Now, it seems like there's prospects for changes or antitrust issues here. But back in the mid-90s, the band Pearl Jam, they were a big deal at the time, took on Ticketmaster, and Ticketmaster won. Is there really any guarantee that anything's going to change in the system?
I don't know if there's a guarantee because of that situation with Pearl Jam, but this is different this time in that since then, there's this merger that people criticized from even before the merger started. So there are still people in Congress who were around when the merger got approved who don't like it and have been looking for ways to rectify that. And along with that, we're seeing a whole bunch of outrage at once with, like we were saying, about the state level, congressionally, with private citizens. So it definitely looks like there's more of a chance for things to change. But yeah, because of what we've seen before, it's not a guarantee at this point.
There's a lot of moving parts going on right now, Justin. What do you have your eye on now for the Ticketmaster story?
Well, in the near future, I have my eye on these Senate hearings that I don't think have a date yet, but I think should surely be interesting and illuminating. And past that, just looking for what comes out of state and federal governments, what reports come out about this Justice Department investigation, and then also to people in the music industry and to fans and to seeing what activism comes up there around Ticketmaster and around small venues and around getting people maybe to find alternatives and seeing if any artists speak out, because that's been another question here, if any artists would want to kind of poke the bear there with Ticketmaster and talk about that with regard to their fans.
Justin, we'll leave it there. Thanks for bringing us up to date on this.
Thank you.
That's Justin Curto, music writer for Vulture, with us today to share the latest fallout from Ticketmaster's botched ticket sales for Taylor Swift's upcoming tour. the company's dominant position in ticket sales, especially in the music biz, and the antitrust investigations that are ongoing. Still time for you to share your thoughts on the Ideas Network Facebook page. As a concert goer, performer, somebody who works at or operates a venue, what is your experience? What is your perspective on this Ticketmaster story? Let us know on the Ideas Network Facebook page.